This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Much like a cunning bank heist, there's something undeniably fascinating about art frauds and forgeries. Perhaps because we're bombarded with stories of incompetent or violent crimes, it's the skill, the planning, and the access required to carefully dupe the art world that easily captivates the public imagination. Anthony Amore is chief investigator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston and author of Stealing Rembrandts and, more recently, The Art of the Con, the most notorious fakes, frauds, and forgeries in the art world. Amore explores the rise and fall of a great many master forgers, from the devious to the delusional, including Wolfgang Beltracchi, whom he says may be the very best of them all. And Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Virginia.
So what stands out about Beltracchi's forgeries? Now, this compared to other famous copyists and frauds throughout history. What makes him so memorable?
Wow. The Beltracchi case is one that the people who've heard about it or read about it are just taken with. First of all, even though he wasn't known to the people who bought the paintings, he was doing the forgeries behind the scenes. Once he was exposed as the artist of the true artist of these Kempendonk paintings and Max Ernst, etc., he is such an engaging character. He looks like what you would envision an art forger to look like. He has this impish way about him. He speaks with this German accent, but in a way that's sort of endearing, and I think he captures the imagination of people who like to romanticize the idea of these art criminals.
What was his technique?
It's really a fascinating story. You know, my entire book, just to backtrack for a second, is about really the people who buy these paintings, who acquire these forgeries. I think my hypothesis is that they are more victims of the elaborate story behind the paintings than the art itself. So Wolfgang Beltracchi had this scam that he pulled with his wife, Helene, and they created provenance for paintings he painted in the style of certain abstract expressionists. So for instance, he would imagine a painting by Max Ernst, and he would execute it, and he would do a reasonably good job. I wouldn't know it from the real Max Ernst sorts of works. But the real trick to selling these was his ability to create provenance for these paintings. So when his wife would bring them to art dealers and say, I have this Max Ernst painting, and the dealer would say, where did you get it? She had this incredibly elaborate story about her father and said that these paintings belonged to her father, who hid them from the Nazis. And she inherited them from him after his death, and she was producing this new collection to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this provenance that tricked the dealers and a believing public.
They even took photographs and sort of artificially aged them so it would look like her grandmother sitting in the salon with all of these pictures in the background.
Unbelievable. Wolfgang went out and bought a period camera from her grandmother's time and the period paper, and took pictures of his wife dressed as her own grandmother in front of these forgeries and used that as provenance.
We've introduced so many things. First of all, provenance is the art world term for origins, I guess, and the history of how it changed hands from person to person. Have I got that right?
You do. And what makes it difficult in the art world is that there's no set form for provenance. It's not like a birth certificate. Well, it's issued by the state, and this is what it should look like, et cetera. There's provenance can come in many different forms, including a photo of your family member from the time.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing about Beltracchi that I think is so daring and interesting is that he wasn't just copying known existing works. He was, as you say, kind of imagining, or he was creating new work as if by these artists.
Exactly correct. He would imagine a Kempendonk painting and imagine what he would have created and gone, and he went and made them. And again, to the layman or even to the novice collector, they're easily passable. But what you find with Beltracchi is that even the experienced collectors and dealers were buying into the story based on the strength of this provenance. Beltracchi even went as far as to create fake labels, aged labels, to put in the back of paintings, showing that they came from a Nazi-era art dealer in Germany. So the dealers didn't have to suspend disbelief. He provided all of the provenance for them, but maybe in many cases, lazy legwork led to the sale of millions of dollars worth of these paintings.
How much did his forgery sell for?
They would sell for typically in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, but in the high numbers. I mean, Steve Martin, the actor, paid, I believe it was $600,000 for one of these paintings and later had to sell it at a great loss.
How were his works finally detected as frauds?
Well, eventually, one of his paintings was examined by a gentleman named Dr. Nicholas Eastaw in London, and he has a company called Art Access and Research. And Nick Eastaw is an amazing, he's not just a scientist who can use these elaborate tools that I can't even pronounce to examine the science behind art, but he's also a conservator, so he can look at art from an art history and technique perspective. And when he examined these paintings, and I interviewed him, and he told me that technically these were not great forgeries. They were easy to detect. But one of the things he found was in a certain Campendonk painting, a paint was used called titanium white.
Mm-hmm.
And that was shown through the chemical analysis. And Dr. Eastaw was able to show that titanium white did not exist in the time of Campendonk. That was not a color that would have been available to the actual artist. So he showed it would have to have been made after the fact. But you can see it was just this one pigment. Other than that, how would the buyer know? Well, that's titanium white. That's not the correct white from the period. So it took scientific analysis. And what I believe Dr. Eastaw was able to show, and he claims, and I agree, is that many of these forgeries are not difficult to discern using science and using the expertise that he has.
I'm speaking with Anthony Amore. He's chief investigator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston and author of The Art of the Con, the most notorious fakes, frauds, and forgeries in the art world. And we're talking about one of the forgers he writes about in his book, Wolfgang Beltracchi, who did more than simply copy famous works. He actually created new paintings in the style of well-known modernists and made millions before eventually being caught. I want to talk about the science in just a moment, but first, just to get a larger sense of Wolfgang Beltracchi, he was interviewed for a British news program last year. Here's a clip. Now, he's talking about the painting that got him caught. Now, this is a forgery in the style of the modernist painter, Henrik Campendonk, titled Red Picture with Horses.
It was the most expensive Campendonk ever sold, nearly 3 million euros.
Except it wasn't a Campendonk.
Yeah, it was not a Campendonk. It was for me, sure. Hmm. Oh, it was the best one.
Do you mean the best one of
the
yours?
The best Campendonk.
Is that what you think? You think that your Campendonk was the best Campendonk?
Yeah, that's a little bit difficult. But it was sold as the best Campendonk was ever sold.
Yeah, but was it the best Campendonk?
Yeah, sure.
So fascinating. What does that little clip tell us about the psychology of Beltracchi and maybe even larger of forgers in general? I mean, you got to be pretty confident to be a con artist.
You do. And there's no question these guys are talented. I mean, he's a talented artist. I remember reading how he had said if the artist that he was channeling was left-handed, he would paint with his left hand.
Wow.
And, I wonder if that's true, but I wouldn't put it past him. You can see from that clip, he is sort of an endearing guy. He's hard not to like.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem as much as ego as he almost seems wide-eyed when he says that. But what it tells us is that people affix dollar values to art. And once you have a number attached to it, you associate it with greatness. When that might not be the case, the whole idea of art, the beauty being in the eye of the beholder kind of gets lost in this. Even when I walk around a museum with people and give them a tour here or there, when I point out a great painting, they'll say to me, how much is it worth? As if saying that it's 50 million instead of 500,000 makes it a nicer painting.
Hmm.
And I think that's a commentary, and you could make an argument for that, actually. But there's no question, especially in 2015, that people associate dollar figures with greatness.
Beltracchi was sentenced to 6 years in prison in 2011. But, you know, similar to what you were talking about earlier, the idea that the art world assigns value to things, he got a little bit of a public following. What do you think of the public regard for, or sort of cheering on in some way, of con men and forgers? What does that say about how the art world is perceived? Like, we're cheering on the guy who hoodwinked them.
It's an excellent point. You know, when the entire book, The Art of the Con, deals mainly with modern paintings, abstract expressionists, et cetera. And I think for the common person out there, they look at some of these paintings and they say, you know, I could do that, or my kid could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they see, well, that painting went for $115 million, and it just boggles the mind. So I think, for the layperson, when they hear that someone like Wolfgang Beltracchi was able to rip off the guy who spent $1 million on one of his forgeries, there's sort of a Robin Hood sort of attitude, like, he took money from a willing dupe,
yeah,
who was buying something silly anyway. So it doesn't seem like as much of a crime. It obviously there's a victim, but it seems maybe to some that it's victimless because what the money was going to be spent on was silly anyway.
Hmm. How does the art world view his forgeries? You know, are they still in circulation?
You know, he is still he's still working with authorities to identify some of his other paintings that are in circulation. After he was convicted, a list of, I want to say, 15 more were released.
Hmm.
And it's believed that there is still, you know, more than a dozen out there. So we may never know. And I think it might be subject to the whims of Wolfgang Beltracchi as to whether he tells.
Well, in your book, you put a lot of faith in the ways that science can expose frauds and forgeries now, the kind, you know, just analyzing the paint, for example, that you mentioned earlier. Do you think it's maybe dangerous to be overconfident about the ability of science to discern and beat the bad guys?
I don't know if it's dangerous. I think the problem is more with people who don't bother to use the services that these analysts can provide. We have one in New England named Jamie Martin, who is an extraordinarily talented person as well in identifying these frauds. Now, I mean, the greater question is it an exact science? And no, but I think it's as near as you can get. And I would say this, if I was going to spend $100 million on a painting, I would certainly spend the thousands of dollars it would take to have, say, Dr. Eastor or his associate, Jalene Nadalny. I would pay them to look at it before I made that sort of investment.
Well, you're chief investigator for a museum. You have a lot more access and probably money to do that kind of forensic work, more so than an individual dealer or curator or a gallerist, don't you?
I think when we're talking about someone that's going to, in the book, we're talking about individuals, investors. And I do think that if you're going to invest that much money into something, I think it makes sense to test its bona fides. And again, the relative cost is extremely low.
Well, given your work at the Gardner Museum, where this notorious heist took place in 1990, and looking at the kind of way that forensics experts can look at forgeries, could either of those things happen in the art world again, a heist on that scale, or a forgery on the scale of Beltracchi and others that you write about in the book?
I'm sad to say they could. I mean, I'm happy to say that it wouldn't happen at the Gardner again, but I can tell you that art theft happens every day. And just a couple of years ago, there was a massive theft at the Kunsthalle Museum. And if your listeners Google art theft every week, they're going to see more heist. It's a $6 to $8 billion per year illicit industry, stolen art. In terms of forgeries, the way I end my book with an epilogue of, as I was finishing the book, these were the stories that were in the news just in the last couple of days, and there were more forgeries, more fakes, more scams, and it's something that will never go away, but we can be more vigilant.
How much time do you spend thinking about that heist and especially the fate of those paintings?
Virginia, it's all of my waking moments and most of my sleeping.
Really?
and I can speak for my colleagues in the FBI. It's a complete, absolute, undying obsession with recovering these paintings, which we will one day.
Anthony Amore, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Anthony Amore, he's chief investigator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston, also author of Stealing Rembrandts and more recently The Art of the Con, the most notorious fakes, frauds, and forgeries in the art world. And you can read more about his work and find a link to hear that full interview with Wolfgang Beltracchi. That's at wordofmouthradio.org.